Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Happy July 4th.
Yes, to you and yours. I hope that people listen to this long, in-depth conversation with Styles P as fireworks go off in the background, lighting up the sky, really highlighting this erudite and esoteric conversation with one of rap's greats.
That's right. And we celebrated another one of rap's greats this past Thursday at New York City's 4040 Club.
Yes, Jay-Z lives there.
He doesn't live there, but...
No, it's like when a teacher lives under their desk.
He invited, and I'm going to say he invited, mm-hmm. I trust he invited a million of his friends, including us...
No, down very, to the, very exclusive club.
Down to the 4040 Club to celebrate the launch of his new album, and what they were going to do was, as far as I knew, play the album before anywhere else.
Yeah, well, guess what? They were going to actually play it at midnight, as I guessed.
Who knew?
And so I did. And so we went down at 10 because we get everywhere early, and we get there and they're playing all of Jay-Z's songs from his entire career.
And I do want to say, this is something that I love. Like, we go to all these listening parties and, you know, people go, and we've talked about this before, people go to just socialize.
Yeah.
People are there to eat hors d'oeuvres, people are there to drink drinks, and people are there to chat up people that they haven't seen since yesterday.
Oh, and by the way, the two of us are great at chatting up people we haven't seen since yesterday. Like, let's not, like...
sell ourselves short?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we went there thinking that this would be different, and it was different, and what I really liked about it was that they were playing, like Jeff said, all of Jay-Z's catalog, basically, in 2 hours, and the crowd rapped every single lyric out loud with excitement, along with everyone to their left and everyone to their right, and I thought that was really awesome. It was genuine, it was dope, and we were there to celebrate something that hadn't happened in 4 years, Jay-Z putting out a new album.
So midnight comes around, and the lights come down, the screens light up.
And by the way, this could have been a visual album. We didn't know what we were about to experience.
Yeah, we didn't know if Mahershala Ali was about to act out Jay-Z's youth. We didn't know what it was. So Elliot Wilson gets on the microphone and says, "Are you ready?"
And we were like,
yes. And then the music doesn't play.
So we're standing right by the DJ booth, and we can see three things. Number one, they don't have Wi-Fi. Big problem.
Yeah, but they did tell us the Wi-Fi password because we could overhear it. It's Carter 4040.
Number two is that they didn't have Flash. So they downloaded Flash right in front of us.
Yeah, we got that on our Instagram story.
Everybody is waiting. Like, the place is packed waiting for Flash to download and update.
Yeah, well, luckily, the entire club did not know that that was happening.
Right.
They just knew that there was an issue.
And number three,
yeah,
no one had a title password. So we were like, you know what? This is not how we wanted to enjoy this album. Eventually, someone did run down and yell into the DJ booth and say, plug the fucking phone in. So we were like, this is great. I'm glad that we celebrated with everyone. Let's go home and listen on headphones. Now, we did listen on headphones, and the album is... I think it's a work of art.
Yeah, I think we are going to be the first two people to say it's really good.
It's really good.
It's a really good album.
You guys should check it out.
Check it out. And now it's streaming on all streaming services.
And what's really awesome is that you not only can listen to the album and make your own assumptions on what went on, you can not only read about what No ID has been saying in the New York Times and Rolling Stone and everywhere, but on July 26th...
Ooh, this is a smooth transition.
Thank you very much. July 26th at the Highline Ballroom, we are bringing together a bunch of people who were involved in this project and, even better than that, can talk about the entire history of Rockefeller Records. We're talking Lenny S., Young Guru, Shaka Pilgrim, Just Blaze, Freeway. Who else am I forgetting? Emery Jones.
And many more.
This July 26th is going down. It's going to be a big live podcast, a waste of time with all those people. One more time. Young Guru, Lenny S., Just Blaze, Emery Jones, Shaka Pilgrim, Freeway.
And many more. Is it funny the second time?
It's better the second time.
Okay.
Itsthereal.com is where you can go get tickets. It's going to be an amazing night talking everything from the very beginning, the bubble-eyed bends, all the way to the buses wrapped in 444 signage. Jeff, you'll be there.
I will be there. Apparently, there are deals where you can buy tickets that you can take pictures with us before the show.
Oh, who wouldn't want that?
Actually, you want to know what? That's the quickest moving ticket right now.
That's pretty awesome. Shout out to everybody who's bought tickets. Shout out to everybody who's going to buy tickets. Don't wait. This will sell out. And today on the podcast, we have
Styles P from The Lox.
Hey!
But most importantly, from Westchester,
hey!
New York. And yeah, we get to talk about a lot of Westchester stuff. We get to talk about his beginnings under Puff.
The Rough Rider days. He tells the best stories about DMX, and he won't tell us Black Rob stories. So
we're going to get Black Rob on the podcast.
Right, that's the answer.
Yeah.
But he talks about Jada. He talks about Sheik. He talks about all the Rough Riders, all the bad boy people.
He talks about stealing shit a lot.
He does, you know.
But that, I mean, there's just so good. There's such good stories.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's a great episode. We're so happy. Shout out to everybody who wanted to get Styles up here. We finally made it happen. And by the way, the best dude.
Also, he smokes some very good weed.
When do you want to get into this episode?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. First Impression, a.k.a. Don't Blow My High.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Long Island Iced Tea, a.k.a. Law & Order Massapequa.
Yo, 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 it's Ghost, a.k.a. Styles P, a.k.a. Space Ghost, a.k.a. Phantom, a.k.a. P, a.k.a. Holiday, a.k.a. Don't Blow My Motherfucking High either.
Yeah, and it's a waste of time with this thrill. SP, what's good?
Chilling, same shit, vibing.
Yo, thank you so much for coming through here.
Thanks for having me.
This has been a long time in the making. A lot of people asked for you to be on this show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for requesting me, y'all. I'm here.
And listen, we are always happy to have a fellow Westchester native here on the podcast.
Yeah.
And you kept
day.
Your 914 number. Jadakiss did not.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so you're kind of true. Yeah. It kind of breaks our heart a little bit that Jada did that, but you know.
I have to keep a 914.
Same number this entire time, or?
Well, I had a few 914 numbers. My
tell
last
us
one.
Tell us every single 914 number you had.
No, I still got my most recent one. I mean, you know my most recent one. You guys have it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when you're from Westchester, it's a proud thing.
Yeah, I took my girlfriend up there. We went up and visited and showed her around just last weekend.
Okay.
We were on Central Avenue.
What did she think?
She thought it was awesome.
Oh.
Yeah, we went to Candlelight Inn on Central Avenue.
I used to live right next door to Candlelight.
Did you really?
I actually live, I mean, the
in
building.
The house that they took over?
No, not the house, you know, it's like a, I don't know what the fuck is that exactly next door to it. But
right.
It's like a, I don't know what that building is, but then there's another building. I used to live in that building over there.
But no longer.
Nah, I got out of there.
But you don't eat chicken anymore, right?
No.
So that must have been difficult.
It was funny, when I was going there, I didn't eat chicken either. So I used to get, I think it was, I want to say a codfish sandwich or a beer battered. It was a fish sandwich I used to get and a waffle fries.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was.
Oh,
I mean,
waffle fries.
I mean, shit, it used to be late night. I used to be high. Walk right there.
Used to be high.
Yeah. I mean, at the time I was going there.
Among other things, and we got so much to get into, but we saw the Bad Boy documentary that Puff did called Can't Stop, Won't Stop at a screening a couple weeks ago. I know it's out on Apple Music now. There's so much that we knew about Bad Boy, obviously, and we went to the tour at Barclays when you guys did it, but to see you guys all get together and rehearse in like the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. How long were you out there for?
For me, it felt like a week or a couple days, short of a week.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was it like going to camp?
It was fun as shit because, like, you know, for me, the best part of the whole tour, like the whole thing, was actually just being around all the artists, and it was just really cool to be chilling with 112, Kim.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Carl Thomas, Total. It was just, you know, Faith. It was just like, it was just fun. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was just really, really fun. And it just felt like nostalgia. It just felt very nostalgic.
Had it been forever since you've seen them?
I've seen some of them here and there, but it's different than when you're on the road.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And you're preparing to do something.
Yeah.
Because when you know when it's a tour, it's like a basketball team, because you don't want to fuck up your set and fuck up or the show. So it's like everybody kind of, When it's a show of that magnitude, you really want to be in tune with everyone, and not just the artists. I think that's what most people don't even understand. It's not just the artists. It's the fucking guy who's raising your crane every night, the girl who comes to you with the water, the dude who's, you know, bringing you your roll up. That's like your family for a minute. You with them, you traveling, you want to hold each other down. So it brings a, you know, especially when I think with artists who are around for the golden era. I always refer to the 90s as the golden era, mid-90s, and, you know, I think it just brings a different feeling of hitting that road. And because nowadays you have, you know, Instagram, Twitter, every fucking aspect of filming and seeing things you can. Back then it was like you either heard about it, you lived the experience, or someone had to tell you about it, you felt it, or like, you know what I mean? So kind of, it was just different. It was like the best of both worlds.
What artists were you especially close with back then?
Pretty much cool with everybody, really cool with everybody, you know what I mean? Lil Kim's like my sister, like, you know what I mean? Always a pleasure to rock with everybody. Carl Thomas is my dog, like, you know what I'm saying? 112 on my dog, like, it's like family, like, because when you work with people and you build a different bond with everybody, like, you know, like, and I think you get to know parts of each other which other people don't know that are not artists. Like, it's like your guard's down, like, you know what I'm saying? You just pretty much chilling.
Oh, and by the way, yeah, we went to the Rough Riders reunion tour, also at Barclays.
Yeah, totally different experience.
Was there any reason why they sort of were like different sets? Eve had her own set, you guys had your own set, Dragon had his own set, DMX had his own set, Swiss, and there wasn't like crossover like the Bad Boy thing? Because for us,
probably to not be like Bad Boy.
Okay, gotcha.
I would think, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
That would be the best way, I would assume, is, you know, they set it up to be not like Bad Boy. And Rough Riders is a different feel from what Bad Boy is. Rough Riders is going to give you more of a raw, just bring your bandana and your t-shirt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm saying? But Bad Boy, you may rent a car.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, we run out our furs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, best your finest garments, and may bring your lady friend. And shit, Rough Rider, you like, man, you know.
Right, if you bring a lady friend, you know, she better bring a knife. Yeah.
Yeah, she better be prepared. Like, not a knife, but she better, you know, have your Tim's on in case you got, you know, bust a move.
Can you talk about when you guys would come to 127th and 7th?
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I wasn't prepared for that. You know? That's a real interesting question, you know? You guys do your homework, man. You guys do your homework. Yeah, 127th and 7th was a beautiful time period in our lives, because it represented the hunger we had, I would say. You know, we were from Yonkers. Rough Riders at the time were our managers. They didn't have a label. They had us and Next. Like, a lot of people don't even know DNY were our managers when we were on Bad Boy.
Yep.
A lot of people don't understand that. So
did Puff know?
Puff definitely. He 1,000% knew. I mean, so, but 127th for 7th, it was the big hangout, you know, the big park. And, it's where rappers from all over would come to, like, you know what I'm saying, or the 2/5, so we'd be all at 2/7 just chilling,
yep,
smoking out, doing whatever we do, you know, just into our craft, like, you know what I'm saying, we just smoking pot, hitting the pull-up bars, chilling, and just waiting for somebody to say that there's another nice rapper somewhere around so we can fucking roast them, like, you know what I mean, because, like, you know, I think in the 90s, you had to build your reputation off of being in ciphers. And even if it wasn't a one-on-one battle, you had to last the circle within a cipher. So pretty much your whole life was a battle. Like, if you couldn't make it in a circle if you wasn't good enough. So it's like you have to come to this circle. I don't know who exactly is going to be here. Sometimes you may. Sometimes you may not. And it's like you have to be prepared to rip whoever's in front of you, or outlast whoever's in front of you, or be just as nice as, or especially when you're from another neighborhood going to somebody else's neighborhood. Now that's their guy. Everyone loves him. So now you have to have the bravado and the inner gut to say, it's like an away game, and you're the away team. So you even have to have more shit on your chest, like, I'm going to show you who I am and where I'm from.
More shit on your chest and more shit on your back, like the Rough Riders are.
Like, fucking, you know what I mean? So not just for us. I'm pretty sure any rapper at that time made their bones that way. Like, you traveled around. But for us, it was very important because we were from Yonkers, New York. There was no, when you hear the radio, you know, it's what up, Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, Long Island, Staten Island. Yeah. It was no Yonkers. even when God bless the dead, Hev put the Vernon on the map. You hear the Vernon. Bless the brothers, the beautiful brothers, Brand Nubians. They put New Rochelle on the map. You would even hear New Row. But you would never hear Yonkers, like, you know what I'm saying? So I think that gave us an extra chip on our shoulder. Like, and we knew that we were nice. Like, not to be funny, but we knew we had what it take as MCs. Like, you know what I mean? We knew we were built different. We knew how much we were willing to work. We knew, like, how much we respected the craft, those who came before us. We were students of the game. We knew we were very streetwise, but yet and still we were very intelligent. Like, you know what I mean? We came from solid families, like middle class, poor families, but, like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot working for us, which we knew, like, you know what I'm saying? And I think being from Yonkers and having coming in a game this way is what makes us pretty much who we are today.
Totally.
We got to talk about the Portchester Shopping Center. We got to talk about... I mean, we can go around the entire thing. We can go and talk about Caldor. We can talk about Rock Bottom. But specifically, you worked at Odd Job.
That wasn't at Portchester. That was at... Right on Central Ave, right where Red Lobster is.
Oh, we thought the
second location.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
No, it's not there anymore.
Then forget.
I lived. I worked at the Odd Job when it was on a couple stores down from Red Lobster on Central Ave in Scarsdale. I had a fucking beautiful time at Odd Job. Yeah, because you kept stealing. I fucking stole everything, bro. Yo, you fucking name it. You know what? It's fucked up because I robbed a lot of stores that I worked at, like, later. Like, you know, and, like, I would either rob them while I was there, you know.
What was your technique for stealing?
It depends if I, like, every store I worked at in and steal from, some, like, when I would just come back and rob straight, like, fuck it, like, some ignorant shit, but I would be like, all right, I know the system, I know when they're going to do this, I know when they're going to do that, and I'm going to just... do what I gotta do. And
so you weren't just like sliding there. Things up your sleeve.
Nah, I was like, when I was stealing out of Odd Job, I was stealing big. I wasn't doing like poor man stealing. I was stealing like loads. I would speak to the guys on the trucks when they're coming in, like, you know what I'm saying, know what's in the boxes, know what was returned from another place, know what was checked off, know what wasn't checked off. So it wasn't just like we were clipping, like we were still like a lot of cases of something. So if it was like a lot of cases of colorful Walkmans that came in a certain color or something like that, we're clipping boxes. So when we clip boxes, sometimes you may have to include a manager. So you got to find out the right manager to hit or the right man, figure out who's stealing to. So it was kind of like, you know, a thing. Because
how long were you there for?
I was at Odd Job for a few years, bro.
You were not the manager? Like,
huh?
You weren't the manager?
I wasn't the manager.
Were you employee of the month?
I probably was a couple times in all actuality, not to bullshit with you. Dead serious. I had to be. Because the guy liked me. The manager liked me a lot, too. I mean, I did my job. Like, I think a lot of people cares when you, I would come in. I would put my Walkman on and,
Where'd you get that Walkman?
Nah, I paid for that Walkman. It was a real high quality Sony that I bought. I would come in, though. I would just, you know, I would get to doing my job. Because my thing was, if I do my job early enough, you know what I'm saying? I had a stock job. I had homework to do, I had rhymes to do, and I had to hit the block and try to make a couple sales, get some extra dollars. So I was trying to manage my time as best as possible. So with our job, at the time, I lived behind Nathan's on Shoreview Drive.
Like, yeah,
you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I'm saying? Yep. I lived back there, so I was like, all right, I could work at our job. I get off at a certain time, drop my shit off, home, go do what I got to do, make it back to the block in time, then make it home all... go to the block, work to do, like, so I had a certain schedules. But then when I started noticing, I was kind of working, I was really doing my job, and I just started noticing, you know, you notice when shit is missing, shit is like when people are doing dirt and this and that. So I just kept my eye open, and one day I was cool with this manager, and I was like, he asked me, like, he knew where I was from, where I hung out at. He knew I lived on Central, but he knew I hung out on the south side of Yonkers, and he was just getting into my background. I was basically like, what you want to do, bro? Like, you know what I'm saying? I already know what's going on. What you know? And then we got cool. And then we just bust down certain shit. I stole furniture.
Furniture.
Radios, sound
Wait,
systems.
Wait, how did you move the furniture?
Out the escalator. Like, Odd Job had an escalator going up and an escalator going down.
No, but I'm saying, how did you transport it? Like, what kind of car were you driving?
Oh, I would have somebody come pick it up. Or I would pick up a truck, a van.
Yeah.
I have the, you know, it was like a layout. It's not like we just got running. Do it like, yo, I think.
Yo, come I don't
through.
Know your life.
Yeah, come through at this time. If you come through at this time, like if it's a flood, like, you know, if it's Thursday around 7 o'clock, you know, a lot of people are going to come in. On a Friday, a certain time, 5-6 o'clock, a lot of people gonna come in, so it's a lot of in and out the stores. A lot of people need help with the carts. While this happens, you have carts ready on the side, and then you just send them up the escalator as you go. Put the stuff in the people, put the people shit in their shit, put the shit in your shit.
Well, you know how the FBI hires like the hackers because they know like how to break into places. I hope that like with Juices for Life, you now know all the tricks and you watch your employees just in case they're trying to like, you know.
Somebody always gonna steal. I mean, we got great employees, not where we at, but any business you're in, you're hiring people. Trust is something that's earned over the years. Like, you know what I mean? If you don't know people's backgrounds, you don't know people's situations, you don't know what drives a man to think or act certain ways, sometimes you have to weigh it out and you know, give the benefit of the doubt, but not give the benefit of the doubt, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I always take in mind that you really don't know what anyone's thinking or going through, so you don't kind of know what they're capable of.
Oh, my God.
The, you know.
Gonna have to, like, you know, for future, like, babies, like, really consider babysitters and, like,
yeah,
on that scale.
Yeah. I know. Fuck yeah, bro. Your baby's fucked up.
I find it very interesting that you were basically the third member of the Lox.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they started rapping before you joined in.
Yeah, they were from the same block on the other side of town.
You were from the, like, south side?
I'm from the south side of Yonkers, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. a couple blocks from McDonald's. Up the block from McDonald's, mm-hmm. Roshan. Mm-hmm. And they were from, like, Glenwood. I knew Sheik around junior high time. And I knew, of course, I would see him around. Like, you know what I mean? But I didn't know him until we got to, like, eighth grade, I want to say. And them two guys were super fucking professional, bro. I was just like a... What's funny is I was actually... Now to think about it, I was actually always who I was meant to be because I was kind of like hard, but I always would kick conscious shit. So I would be like on the balance of hard but conscious because too many people wasn't going too conscious. And if they was, I didn't like... Didn't want to be caught in a pocket with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who was getting attentions were the, you know...
Yeah.
Dudes who were spitting that regular fly flamboyant shit. So I was trying to mix it up and do both and pretty hard. But those two were really like super fucking professional. Just Yonkers in general. There was so many nice, like, there's so many names I'm gonna forget, but there's like a Bill Blash, Universal, my man Khalif Cool, K-Poetic, Lord Devon, Raw Rome. So many, I'm high upon right now. I'm high. And but there's so many people like where you had to come up outside and you had to have bars. Like you had to you had to be able to say some shit or you just didn't fit in. So
one of the first times that we met Jada, he was rolling with guys like Ice Pick and there was Kiwi and Mike L with the eye patch, and we talked about this with Jada when we had him on the podcast. And he was like, oh, he's like, I got lots of friends with crazy names. He's like, Richie Thumbs. Did you know Richie Thumbs?
Yeah, I know Richie Thumbs. All our friends got crazy names.
Richie Thumbs. And he said that Richie Thumbs got a deal because you guys rapped on a song with him.
Yeah.
And he got Sylvia Rhone gave him a deal. Mm-hmm. And does that have anything to do with the line, sound anything like Kiss Then Sign right here?
Nah, I wouldn't say that. I would say that line has to do with the percent. I think we're the most... Far as rap's concerned and the delivery, I think we deliver the most basic, complex style. Like, it's very complex, but it's very basic. It's almost like we're talking to you. And I think before we pretty much did that, everybody was really rappy. Extra rappy. Like, if you just peep that time, anybody, and no disrespect to anybody, I'm pretty sure we brought that to the game. Like, that... Just basically, you feel like someone's talking to you, but like they're rhyming.
And also like they're going to kill you.
Yeah, but you know, so I think we always, because we started noticing a few years after we were in the game, like that people were kind of taking our style. Like Far is just making it more basic. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. simple always wins. I think, and that was the thing about it. It's like when we came out, it's like, wow, they saying some shit. But it's really clear how they're saying and it's really understands pretty much like we talk to you with rhythm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Instead of being, because like a lot of rappers over rap. And like, if you think about it, if you say, it doesn't matter how you say cat, hat, and rat, it's going to fucking rhyme.
Right.
Cat, hat, and rat. It doesn't matter. So when you have the, as an MC, have delivery in your mind. You don't have to really over rap. This is how we you want to rap, but you want to be passionate about what you're saying. So when somebody hears it, they could feel it. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I think we kind of brought that to the game. And after us, it was kind of like, I'm pretty sure other people have, but I mean as a solidified street group,
mm-hmm.
and you know, to be repetitive with it on all sorts of tempo tracks. I don't think, you know, you can say too many other people have really done it like us.
Yeah. By the way, David Styles sounds like the fakest name ever.
It does, right? It does. You know, it's funny because coming up, I used to people be like, what's your name? So I'd be like, they're like, nah, what's your real name? You know? Because Styles was in Teen Wolf, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When it came down to picking rap names, what was your original rap name?
My first rap name had to be Dave Ski. Hey, some stupid like that.
Something real 80s.
Yeah, some real fucking 80s. It was definitely a ski in it. Like, it had to be D Ski or Dave. Some fucking retarded, dog. Some straight retarded.
Jada can break dance. Can you break dance?
Nah. I could boogie.
Can you?
Yeah, I could boogie a little. But I don't head spin, but I could hit you with it like a hit you a mean hand spin. Like a hand spin.
Yeah.
And I could
Did you guys all go to high school together?
Yeah.
So you went to Gordon High School?
Yeah.
And
Wolves.
What's up? Did you play football?
Nah, no, I saw crack fucked my whole life up.
Because when we had Jada here,
yeah, he was making fun of our high school. He said that he played ours.
Yeah.
I don't think that he did.
We went to Harrison High School, right?
I think they definitely played Harrison. Definitely.
He was like, we used to kill y'all. Yeah. To murder y'all.
What was high school like?
When you went.
Yeah.
No, I went to school a lot. I was fucking smart. Still smart.
Yeah.
I'm not debating that. I just didn't know if you were like...
I was active. I was an asshole, but I was active. I was like a good, smart kid. Like, over smart. Like, this shit is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like... High school was super fun, man. Rhyming. A lot of rhyming. I think that's where we really made our bones. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's the bomb squad.
Yep.
That's when we were the bomb squad. Like, you know, that's the... A lot of crap. This one I say Sheik and Kiss are really professional dudes. The most fucking two and I don't say this because they're my partners. I say this because it's really facts. Like at this particular time, like everybody would be able to rhyme, and you know, but when you get to a studio, it's a different thing. Like they had, all right, the studio's for this many hours. We gotta lay this. This is the beat. This is like, you know, gotta be this formatted the song. I'm like, what the fuck is like? This was supposed to be rhyming outside and rhyme the shit out of somebody else and embarrass them. But they really had the vision of making it since high school. Like, you know what I'm saying? With a firm thing. So I was always like, yeah, this is going to be beautiful. Like, because at that time, like, you know, and it was like, I rhymed, my man Casino rhymed. Sean Brown, Slim rhymed. My man Side Dog, the Mute Assassinator. Like, so we would, Bomb Squad, there was a few rappers in it. Like, you know what I'm saying? General Ron didn't go to school with us, though. So it was like, They was like the Jungle Brothers and I was Q-Tip. They was like EPMD and I was gonna be like Red. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I think I was just, by what they used to do was just so amazing. I just used to just watch and just pick up and learn and go to the studio, and they used to help me format it, do that.
Like count out the bars patient. And
count the bars, be patient. Cause at that time, it was real, not even ADAT. So you couldn't, like, a fuck up is bad because then they got to cut the tape, piece it together. So fucking up is really, really, really bad. Like, these young artists have no idea how fucking sweet they have it and how much
undo is their best friend.
Yeah, how much work all these kids put in.
Yeah, like, so, like, you can't, a fuck up's a real bad fuck up. So,
where was the studio?
In Pelham, I want to say.
Okay.
Pelham,
you know. So you go to the studio and you guys are working. When did you like solidify that it was going to be the three of you then?
We like a group anyway. Like, this bigger than outside of the music. Like, even the music part. Like, outside of LOX and outside of D-Block, it's like a family thing. It's not just us three that's like it. So it's like everything's kind of like an effort to get to the goal line or however you do it. I think because we always used to rhyme together anyway. So I just... was getting on more songs anytime we ciphering. I'm always in a cipher with him. So I think it kind of just transitioned to normal. And then when we went to Puff, he just kind of like, nah, it's y'all three.
Well, before you signed to Puff, Clark Kent told us that he tried to sign you guys to Motown. Yeah. What was that like?
A couple people tried to sign us. Shit, we could have signed with Suge when we signed.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... I mean, it felt really good. Like, you know what I'm saying? We from fucking Yonkers, New York. We bust our ass to get here. And now we get recognition. And when you believe in something and there's nobody else believes you, and it's a world full of doubters, and it's like, fuck no, nobody ever did it from Yonkers. Y'all not going to do it, such and such, you know? And from the jump, especially when you remember back them early years of you doing it and people be like, Well, make sure you do other shit, and that's not really reasonable to do, and it's not a good future. But it makes you feel like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like, fuck yeah. Like, I fucking told you so.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Like, I fucking told you so. It's because, you know, when you're from, y'all know y'all from 914. We mm-hmm. got a fucking chip on our shoulder. We with a, like, we come with a shitload of pride. Like, there's a shitload of pride for 914, dude. So it felt like, I fucking told you something. Fuck you if you didn't believe me.
Yeah,
like, you know what I'm saying? Straight up.
Flex never shouts out Westchester, and he lives in Westchester.
And he sells Westchester Fords. How did the Shug thing go down?
We were fucking hot. That's how it went down. I think the word was out that we were hot. People were hearing about us. Dan Wild were great managers. Mary passed the demo out. Word of mouth on the street. It's just ill. It's three dudes who could fucking rap their ass off. Like, you know what I'm saying? So people started making the calls. But with Shug, we just felt like, you know, we hip hop. We hip hop dudes. We can't go to, we can't sign to LA.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? We can't. And this is no beef. It is no, I mean, we ain't thinking about beef. This is, this is more like, nah, we East Coast heads. Like, you know what I'm saying? We gotta.
But was like Shug like flying over? Like, was it that serious, or was it more
like... No, it was like, y'all get on a plane. Come over. I fly all y'all over, fly all y'all people. It was like that.
Did you take the flight?
No.
Nah. Before you signed to Puff, you went away, though.
I want to say I did 7 months.
And did you think that, like...
Well, I came home. It was fucking popping. Yeah. Like, I went to... It was fucked up before I went in. It was no... I didn't...
Well, that's because the professionals.
It was like... Fucked up. Came home, the two professional dudes was on a fucking job, man.
Did you get
they had it right. They had DY management. We doing this. Because I was in jail. I remember telling them, don't worry, it's going to be all good. Because I was like, yo, man, I can't do jail, but I can't be broke. Like, right. I can't do regular. Like, you know, when you have in your mind, and I didn't even know what regular was. I just knew I wasn't a 9-to-5-er. Mm-hmm. I knew I was smart. I knew I wasn't a college kid. Like, you know what I'm saying? My semester in Westchester County didn't go the way I wanted it. Mm. You know what I mean? Because before I went to jail, I did a county and I did a semester at Westchester. So I was trying to find
what'd
my way.
What did you study there? Do you study? I don't know what.
Bullshit. Whatever bullshit. They was doing real shit, my two partners.
Yeah, yeah.
Music shit. Me. I was doing bullshit. I don't even fucking
Chinese
know.
Chinese history.
I was rhyming every day. I would go to surgery shit and then I'd be rhyming in that fucking. That Westchester cafeteria, big.
There were other people that could rhyme.
There was a fucking lot of dudes who could rhyme in that college at that
really?
Time. Really? That's what really made it dope. That was a really dope experience, too, because...
Then why'd you drop out?
It wasn't fair. I wanted money.
Yeah.
It was just fucked up. I wanted clothes. I was greedy. I was blinded. I was just lost. I was lost. I know I wanted to do a lot, but I was also on the streets. Like, you know what I'm saying? I was... Yeah. You know, I was outside, I had jobs, but it wasn't like I was a dude who was just, like, I was always just trying to find a way. I had a stock job, you know, I pull a little robbery here.
Yeah, yeah.
I sell a little crack here, a little dope here, another job, you know, and I always kept the job for a while.
Were you still living with your parents when you were doing that semester at Westchester Community College?
Off and on, the homies had a crib in the hood.
Yeah.
So, I was at home. And outside, that point of life is like every day. I mean, I'm 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm doing in life, and I'm always on the move. So every day I'm smoking weed,
mm-hmm.
working, hustling,
rapping.
So every day is kind of like I'm in the house. I may not be home for a couple of days.
And
I might be at homie's house, this homie's couch. Maybe outside for all nighter.
Mm-hmm.
Go home, shower. Be outside another all-nighter, go home, shower. Home is, like, that time was just kind of just running.
At that point, were your parents just like, what are you doing?
Well, my mom's South African.
Right.
So, I live with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
My pops at the time, God bless his day, he was alive. He lived in Mount Vernon. My mom's like my pops is the superest, coolest dude in the world. I probably get my cool,
mm-hmm.
cool, mellow side from my pops and my fiery side from my mom.
Like, yeah.
I think so. My mom, we would just always talk like real adults, like, because I had the type of mom I would always go, no matter what, I want you to tell me what's going on.
Hmm.
Like, if you kill somebody, you want to be able to tell me you killed somebody. You want to be able to have that kind of, so me and my mom kind of, and when you come up rough and you go through certain things with your family, your bond either separates or becomes stronger. So my mom would just kind of warn me, like, when you go to jail, I'm not fucking with you. Like, I'm not coming to visit you. She didn't curse, but I'm not coming to visit you. You know better. You wise. You going, you know, certain things going to lead to certain things. And my mom's from South Africa, and she had to work hard to get what she got in life. So they don't see, like, you know, that easy way out, and you crying and complaining about shit, huh? That shit you think you crying and complaining about is nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So always instilled something in me. So she will always just be like, because she also would support me with music. Like, you know what I'm saying? So say if I was going somewhere or something, like, you know what I'm saying? It was a real time. I'd be like, shit. And I'm down on money. My mom would be like, yo, I'll buy you a couple outfits or something. I know you're trying to do your music thing. Stay out the streets. But I had a job, too, at all times. So it was kind of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, she'd just be like, if you do dirt, you're going to end up paying for it. And it's going to affect you and it's going to hurt you. And, you know.
Yeah.
Be sensible about it. So my mom's a very realistic, straight up person.
We want to have the same sort of relationship. If you have killed anybody, you can tell us.
Shit, no. No, but you do want that with your kids, because you don't want... I used to think she was crazy for saying that when I was coming up, until I had a son of my own. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because you don't want your kid to be out there in case... Say if that situation does happen and your kid's going crazy, they need to be able to call somebody that could sit there, talk to them, and guide you through something. And nobody's going to do that for you like family. Like,
yeah.
That family's... She's just basically saying, no matter what, I'm going to always be your family. I'm going to always love you. I'm not going to, you know...
Yeah. Yeah, see you in 7 months.
Yeah.
Who did come and visit you?
Oh, my mom did come and visit
me. Oh, she did. Shouts to her.
Yeah.
So, at what age do you sign with Bad Boy?
I'm going to say it was maybe 20.
20?
20, 21.
Oh, my God.
20, 21.
Did you...
No older than 22, I know that.
Right,
for
right.
For a fact.
And who else was on the label at that point? Big.
Big.
Craig Mack.
Total.
Faith?
I want to say, yeah.
And 112?
Getting there around where we getting there, I want to say.
So you sign there. Do you have in your mind an idea of how quickly you want to put a product out? Besides as soon as possible?
Nah. Because we're trying to absorb, see, feel it out, learn. Like, you know what I mean? And you just so... The moment's so surreal, and you become in a whole new world. I think that's what people don't really... No one can really explain. I don't even know how to really explain it. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're just from the world you was in to a whole new world. Now you may be sitting around other artists. You're hearing... Now you're around execs. You're hearing business shit. You're hearing different music. You're seeing producers you never saw before. Artists you never saw before. You're learning things you've never learned. Like, you know what I'm saying? So now you're kind of... It's like you're placed... It's like to say... It's like, say, just imagine... Your high school year, like, you know what I'm saying? You not knowing what the fuck you're gonna do, to be being placed in a room full of journalists and colleagues full of shit, and just really picking up all the tricks and trades of... It's like overwhelming, it's absorbing, but it's like, holy shit, I've arrived. Like,
yeah,
I've arrived into a whole new world. And I think with you being in a new world, you try to adjust to being in it, and you try to learn and try to go as you go. You definitely want to do shit, but I think, like, I've still learned off of Puff. We learned so much shit off of him just from watching. Like, you know what I'm saying? Just watching and just peeping it and just seeing how game goes and just watching Big schooling us, giving us jewels, telling us certain shit. So you kind of sit back and you absorb. Like, you know what I'm saying? You absorb and you in a rush, but you kind of living a life right now. Like,
and by the way,
you're on the Chicago Bulls of rap at the particular time. So there's no, like, you know what I mean? It's like surreal. We just came from Yonkers, New York, where nobody gives a fuck about any Yonkers rappers to being on the Chicago Bulls of rap. So
were you
like
the Horace Grant?
Yeah. Nah, I'm a scorer, baby.
But you didn't have the goggles. You didn't have the goggles, though.
I get it.
And where were you recording at that point? Because you go from, like, this Pelham...
Rough Riders.
Oh,
Rough
you
Riders, yeah. We at that point, we had a Rough Riders studio. We out of Pelham. We in a Rough Riders studio.
So Bad Boy didn't make you go to, like, any studios?
Nah, we went to Bad Boy studio too, but Rough
Daddy's
Riders
house?
Studio is our lines then.
Yeah.
Like, that's where you'll catch us, Mace, X, and this is before the contract.
Mace went up there too?
Yeah. This is before the Bad Boy contract. This is before Mace is signed, X is signed, before we signed. If you come to that Rough Riders studio, that's where you would have seen a lot of fucking hunger and energy. Because besides being on the street now, we're in 127 for 7 from outside, to being in different places, spots in New York, rapping, to taking that same energy and bringing it to the studio. You know what I'm saying? The Rough Rider studio. Because the Pelham studio is more like high school.
Right.
And, you know, end of high school and all of that. When I'm out of jail and stuff and come from there, now we're in Rough Rider studio, which is in the heart of Yonkers to the square. And it's just hunger. Like, every day is really wake up, do whatever you do in your life. You know, we on the block. If I'm on the block, DNYD probably come scoop us off the block. Then we're hitting the lab or hitting 27 if we get something to eat. You know what I mean? We're going to Copeland's, we're going to Jimbo's, get something to eat. 127 for 7 if we at the park. Or we at 125th and the Mart right across the street from Apollo. We got bars, whoever won it, we giving it to them. We doing what we do. We smoking, we getting weed from the areas. We got a pot, then we're going back to the lab and making songs. Our whole mold is pretty much starving energy music and just flow. Like, you know what I'm saying? So our whole days pretty much thrive on us getting up and getting busy and just living a life that's collided full of street shit and music shit. 24/7, like, you know what I mean? 24/7, like, it's either you on a block, you're doing this, or you're on somebody else's block, and then it's, you're doing music, and then you're running around doing what you got to do, what you would do anyway, like, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of the time. That's why I say it was such a dynamic of just imagine waking up. I went from waking up, probably from doing dirt the night before, trying to pull off some bullshit robbery for some petty bucks, selling dope, selling bass, or selling smoke, stock job, then it's rhyming, then it's downtown and that, all the way to now we're on Bad Boy. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's such a...
Yeah.
It's like...
Like whiplash. Like,
yeah,
whiplash.
Exactly.
And I think that's what made us who we are, though. I think that's what always kept us so connected to the streets and made us the most regular Joes that you probably ever see in the industry. The most common dudes to kick it with.
Yeah.
One from our struggle, one from being from 914.
Yeah.
And two, just being in the mix of both worlds. One foot in, one foot out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Until making it.
And
until the day we made it. We just one foot in, one foot out. And then I bought a kilo with my Bad Boy friends. Like, that wasn't a bullshit. Like, we really bought a kilo with the Bad Boy friends.
Holy
like,
shit.
We was like, fuck it. Like, it's case just in case.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, wait, wait.
But where'd you move it?
Did you tell your mom that?
Hell no. Hell no.
Where'd you move that?
We moved it.
Had a friend come with a pickup truck and
It moved.
When do you think you made it?
I thought we made it that day. Shit, I thought we made it the day we first rhymed in front of Puff, and he said he was on us. And then I knew we made it when Puff brought us to rhyme in front of Big. You know what I'm saying? And Big was very receptive and open arms and like, I'm glad you're here. Y'all motherfuckers rap.
And by the way,
and then every night when we in the studio, whoever Big company was, Big. Y'all gotta hear these. So Big, you know what it mean? For Frank White to be bigging us up.
Oh my God.
And he didn't have to have open arms. That's why I always hold Big so dear.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have to do that. Like,
not much older than you either.
Yeah, not much older, from a whole different place. So he was very embracing. And besides that, Big, like, I remember going to sessions. Because you got to think, Sheik could come with his immediate right hand, Kiss with his immediate right hand, my immediate right hand. Then sometimes we got two right hands each. You know what I'm saying? And Big would still treat each one of them how he treated us.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
Amazing. The guy was the classiest gangster I ever met. I swear. I never seen nothing like that in my life.
Anybody nicer than him, rhyme-wise?
Never.
Never.
Never. Not to me. The reason I say this, because there's a lot of nice rappers. The reason I always, because Rakim is, of course, the god. Kool G is, of course, the god. Kane, KRS, those are the forefathers. There is no Big, Nas, Hove, or us without those four guys, first and foremost. Like, we gotta set the record straight. That's Mount Rushmore for me of hip hop. Rakim, Kool G, Kane, KRS. Like, you know what I'm saying? It gets, you know, you gotta, there is no Big, Hov, Nas, or us, or we want nobody without them. So, but what particularly makes me say Big is the best is for how many different categories he was nice in. think about it. Like, when you think about a rapper, like, take me for instance, Jewel Styles P. He's gangster, he's hard, but he'll give you some conscious shit. He's deep. He's deep, he's hard. He's conscious, he's hard. Man, you go such and such, this guy, oh, he's fly, he's slick. Like, oh, he's witty, he's this. Oh, he's for the ladies, he's this.
But Biggie was everything.
Biggie was everything.
Storyteller. Think about
his catalog. He was a storyteller. He fucking went Bone Thug style. I think that's what he had. He was a hybrid. He was like a hybrid. His lady songs was crazy. His feature verses were crazy. He was a, like, so he nailed pretty much every category. And then I think Life After Death is what sets the bar for me. Like, I don't think the bar's been topped. And I don't think anybody can honestly say it has, if we're being honestly speaking, from going from your first album to your second album. Like, it was so perfect. It was like he wasn't even meant to be here when you think about it in a retrospect. That was like God knew what was happening before it was happening. That's a fucking masterpiece. Like, as an MC, sometimes I got to sit down and listen and say, damn, how the fuck was he in that zone for so many times? And then to be in the studio and see him in them zones sometimes. Because I remember some nights, and it'd be, everybody's drinking, Mr. Bacardi, Lil Moon. He got mayonnaise full of jars, full of weed. And I never seen Big Roll. I've never seen Big Roll up in my life.
Did his right hand do that?
Anybody, you, yo, roll up.
Yeah.
Roll up. Roll everybody. Never
oh,
seen
I would roll. I would roll a terrible.
I've never seen him roll, and I've never seen him drive. That's why Else makes him a classic gangster. But I remember being fucked up, and everybody fucked up, and it's tired. And I remember waking up, like, out of a slumber, and he was just in the zone while everybody was down and the beat was there, and you could just see him. He was just a bop, like, it was just some shit, and I was like, and it was, it was either Kicking the Door or one of them, but I forgot which one. I think it was Kicking the Door or something else, but his bop just to the beat on the thing, I thought he would have been out like everybody else.
Yeah.
So it just kind of shows, I think he... What made him the illest MC is that the diversity of him. I think it's diversification and to be able to hit a 10 when you diversify. Like, man, I could say some fly shit. Like, man, I could actually get slick. You know?
Yeah.
It's not my cup of tea, though. It's not like if I do that shit 7 times, you're going to be like, come on, boss. Fuck out of here. We don't want to hear about your Bentleys and your helicopter. I could put that in a nice, very slick way, though. Like, you know, but are you going to believe me?
Right.
Is it going to be believable if I do it on a consistent basis? Like, if I keep, you're gonna be like, that's not who you really are. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
And so on with so many, a lot of rappers, you could be like, all right, I know him for that. I know most guys, you're gifted if you have 3 categories. Like, you know, we'll mostly get 2, you get 3, you're pretty gifted.
Right.
Be you know, be very humble about it. But when you get more than that, is, you know, you're a phenomenon.
Yeah.
You're a phenomenon, and it takes, I think it takes them in a different zone, like in a different, I think it takes a different, your mind to be in a different state, like, you know what I mean? Because as MCs, sometimes we hit zones and don't know where they come from. I have rhymes that I could tell you the spirits gave them to me. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know, after the rhyme's done, I'm like, I don't really know, I don't really pretty much know where it came from.
Well, I mean, like,
it was there.
You have some very dark rhymes. I wonder if you ever, like, you don't write, but like, if you ever thought of something and you were just like, oh shit, like, I'm fucked up.
Sometimes I go dark in life, but I think that's what man is for me. Like, you know what I mean? I don't like to hide from myself. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think a lot of people, because of judgment or how people view them, like, if I feel dark, rhyming dark, I'm gonna rhyme dark.
You're gonna talk about boiling a kid.
I'm gonna talk about it pretty much, because it's the act of art. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think that's where hip hop, sometimes we get put in a box because we're from the ghetto, we're from crime ridden neighborhoods, and where poverty is, and where this and that. But the whole world is, and so I don't get in a box. Like, the world fucking loves criminals. The world, not black people, not white people, the fucking world. Everybody loves Billy the Kid. Everybody loves Jesse James. Everybody loves Scarface. You just downloaded Queen of the Border, El Chapo, Pablo. Everybody loves a bad guy because it's really saying middle finger to the system at some point. Like, you know what I'm saying? So with me, I feel like my art, if I make dark art, that keeps me from acting dark. Because if I didn't make that dark art, that could be a dark act.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And more, I think people, that happens in life, in real everyday life. Everybody's not an MC. Everybody's not an artist. Everybody's not a painter. Everybody's not an artist in some shape or form. So now if you have a dark thought and you have no way to express it, you don't work out, you know, you don't rhyme, you, how do you get the dark thought off?
Mm-hmm.
You don't share. Like me, I'm 180 negative, I'm 180 positive. I strive my best to be on my 180 positive as much as I could be. That's where I want to stay. But do I deny I'm 180 negative? No, I won't, because if it came to it, I would display that 180 negative in a quick time period. Like, you know what I'm saying? And
you are a gangster and a gentleman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think, and my gangster is not the typical gangster, because like right now, the top gangster in America would be Donald Trump, if you ask me.
Well,
like, so my view of gangster and what everybody's view, because I think people automatically associate gangsters with minority, poverty, and hoods. The bus driver who will split your shit for fucking with his kid is gangster. And Bronx Till, when he told Sonny stay away from his kid, he didn't have power. He didn't have anything, but he believed that. That was gangster. The guy who works 9 to 5, busses his ass, does his double shift, come home, doesn't make enough rent, enough money to pay rent, food, pay child support, or pay his kid's tuition and this and that, but makes it happen is gangster. So I think gangster's really your will.
Mm-hmm. And but don't you think that Trump is a pussy? Like, I feel like he's such a pussy. Like,
he's definitely a pussy, but he's doing gangster shit, because this is a guy who said, grab him by the pussy, build walls, black people, y'all could use it when you got to lose, this and that. So he's definitely a pussy and an asshole and ignorant, but he's basically found a way to hit, to, you know, target point and hit some strike hating people to win what he wants, like, you know what I'm saying, and force his hand. That's his gangster. So gangster, gangsters fall in a lot of different conversation, and so does gentleman, because you can't be one without being the other, really. In some shape, aspect, or form.
What was it like when you linked up with Mace on Bad Boy after having that experience?
It's like we never lost the thing with Mace. We never not seen him from that point of us, from the Rough Rider studio to that point. There was a time I actually was fucking crazy. Is one time, this is before we was all on, I had an altercation. Somebody basically came to my crib fucking around with me, and we basically got into like a little shootout. I had to get out of my crib. I had to move out the crib. The thing, I stayed with Mace, actually.
Really?
A few days I stayed with Mace. I had to stay with Mace for a couple days because I had to get out of Yonkers. I couldn't be in Yonkers. Couldn't be about my mom's crib or nothing. So I was actually with Mace. Then Mace brought me by Cam.
Yeah.
I was walking around with Mace and Cam for hours, chilling, smoking. So, you know, our whole kind of process up to getting on, you know, it was kind of, we was with each other pretty much.
And then you're signed to the biggest rap label at the time.
Yeah.
So Biggie passes away.
Yeah.
What was your experience like during the funeral?
It was just rough. You know, it was just really rough. I was familiar with loss because I had lost my little brother already. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with me, it was just like, wow, it's just really rough. And this is, that was big. Like, you know what I mean? That was big.
And then you guys had to put together, I mean, you didn't have to put together, but you did put together What Was Love Big Papa.
Yeah.
Which, like, I think is like a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Thank you. What was the process like in putting that together?
Well, we figured we had to do something for him, you know? He did a lot for us. We had to do something for him. So we was like, you know, that's the king of New York right there. So he's like, we're going to pay our homage. And you know, he good now. And just do what we do. And then everybody loved it. And I think we just did it because we just wanted to be like, you know, pay our homage to Big. And everybody loved his shit. And it was cool. Puff loved it. Then he did his joint.
Yeah.
Then it came out pretty dope, you know? Shot the video.
And so how do you pick up the pieces as a collective at that point?
That was rough.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like Puff.
Personally or as all three of you guys?
All three of us, me the most, though.
You the most.
Mm-hmm. I didn't like him.
Was it personal?
I liked him. It was personal, not personal. I didn't like how he moved. I didn't feel... I think what got me one time is I remember Dog Pound coming to the studio and we was there for hours. And I remember him saying something. Yo, y'all hungry? And he asked them, but not us. And the thing, like, we was been there, I was like, And that personally right there for me, you know it's 914, but it was like, and I didn't like how he talked. I felt like he talked to people like lower at that time. Like, you know, he was just a boss. Like, mm-hmm. So he was talking like a boss. And the chip on my shoulder just made me really not like that. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? So it just didn't sit right with me.
And you go to DNY and you tell them and they say what?
Well, I think we had a meeting. It all went wrong when we was having a meeting. And I just lost it. I just lost it and picked up the chair and tried to hit him with it.
Right.
I tried to hit Puff with the chair. And I think after that moment, it was just kind of... It was pretty much done. All the, I was just tight. I had a bad temper back then.
How big was the chair?
A regular office chair, like a rolly.
Like something you would steal from, like, you know.
Like a nice... It was a high quality meeting chair. A bad boy staff. High quality.
Do you think you had bad aim or he had good agility?
A bit of both. A bit of both. Hurt my ankle throwing shit too when I did it. Twist my ankle a little.
Growing up, it was a big moment for us. That whole, you know, Free the Locks campaign, the t-shirts, that whole time.
I'm glad that we were able to do it.
Was there
the two of us?
Was there an end goal for you guys besides just like getting off?
Yeah, get off.
Yeah, but
get off was the end goal at that particular time. Right? Set it on the shirt. Let the locks go. That was the Well, we wanted to do that, and we wanted to, like, I don't know if you remember, if you think about it, it's an actual gap in this thing. We were staying alive strictly off of mixtapes. So we noticed that if you fuck with Puff and then you didn't fuck with Puff, you were fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, most people, they with Puff, they leave Puff. It's over. Good night. Good night, Irene. Kiss the baby. Count the kids. Tuck them in. All that shit. So we was kind of like, what can we do? Like, you know what I'm saying? And then we said, you know what? We do what we do. Mixtapes will make it kind of... Make it where something, like, you know what I'm saying? Make it to where they know y'all took over this shit. Make it to where you're alive and the people, you have to rely. We looked at it from this stage point. We don't have enough money to go against them. We don't have enough affiliates to go against them. Business-wise, we don't have enough power. We don't have enough knowledge. We don't have enough shit. But what you do have is the power of the streets. You got to always recognize where your personal power stands. And we had the power of not giving a fuck, of starting over. Because at that particular time, this is what bugs me out. We had a standard contract.
With Bad Boy.
With Bad Boy. We had the standard industry contract. The contract we had with Bad Boy was the standard industry contract. That was pretty much, I would say, 90% of the artists had at the time. Us being the dickheads from 914, the rebels, fuck y'all, the assholes. Wait a minute. 10 times 10 is $100 everywhere in the fucking world.
Yeah.
The numbers that match up, like, you know what I'm saying, of sales to the thing and this contract. And then I remember from when I was young, I've heard this my whole life, contracts are meant to be renegotiated.
Yeah.
That's what they're meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it stays the same. So they was, everybody like, this is Puff, the lawyer's like this. I'm like, we like, you know what? Fuck this shit.
And then you threw a chair at him.
Power the street, throw the chair, keep the mixtape going, thing. So it all panned out.
Okay, so on your first album, you have like 20 samples.
Yeah.
Is that what fucked it up? Like,
Rod's a legend.
No, but I'm saying like...
What fucked that up?
Like, Rod Stewart takes how much of your publishing?
Nah, we didn't complain about the publishing too much. We have a standard thing. It's not about... If you're a businessman,
right? I'm not.
It's about having balls. When they explain to you exactly what you say, oh, you just ate this up, this did that, this did this do that. Okay, I don't want that contract anymore. I need another contract now. That's cool. Do whatever. No, we can't do that. You signed for such and such. That's where the problem occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're either going to be pussy and believe it and not fight and take their word for it and not do whatever, or you say, fuck y'all, you know, we're gonna it's gonna be a problem.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a problem. Like, cause I'm not. You mean to tell me this means I came from the ghetto? I didn't go to law school. I didn't do, you know. And this is the standard, but we gotta keep it this way. Hell, fucking no, no, no. And then at that time, if you notice, after we did that, other artists start beefing with their label. Because I think more so than anything, people was just afraid to say, I'm not as rich as you think I am.
Right.
Like, you think I'm rich, I look cool, I got jewelry, I got cars, I got videos.
I saw you hanging out with Mariah Carey.
Yeah, I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
Nobody really wants to say that. We was from 914, so it was like, fuck it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this is the truth, this is who I am. And we had the mentality, if you made it, you can make it again. Like, you know what I'm saying? If you start from the bottom, you made it. That's, that happens in life.
Did you stop talking to everybody from Bad Boy?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Did you stop talking to Puff?
Yeah. For the time, yeah.
Yeah.
But Harv, Pierre, or like, you know.
I ain't really fuck with him, but I wasn't mean mugging him and wanted to beat him up or none of that. Nobody. I wasn't that much a sociable person that much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm real sociable with certain people, certain characters, certain vibes, but when it comes to industry shit, I'm me particularly, like, I just play my position. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't try to overstep my boundaries, because rap is a lot of party rap, especially with industry shit. When I say party rap, I mean full of shit talk.
Like, what? What? The what?
Yeah. Our industry?
Yeah, it's like, I don't full believe of shit. It. Like, what? Like, you don't have to do that because we see each other.
Right.
Yo, yeah, well, get up. Let's lay it. Like, just because we at this party together, bro, it don't necessarily have to be that. Like, you know what I mean? But that always happens. So I call it party rap, and rap is so full of shit when it comes to that. Like, I'm a stoner. I like pot. I love getting high, and I like making music. So I don't really... The in between bullshit. Like, mm-hmm. I sell fruits and veggies on the side and shit. I don't got no time for you to be fucking bullshitting me.
Are any of the locks good at being industry, like politicking?
Yeah, all of us. But I don't have it. Nah, Kiss would be the best. Sheik, you probably won't even see him. That nigga's like, he's like Kiss is more. He cool with everybody. I'm cool, but I don't know. Like, I just have my, you know, I like certain people I fuck with and certain people I don't fuck with, and then I don't like to overstep my boundaries. Silence is good sometimes. I feel silence in mind of your business keeps you out of the fucking loop and out of the loop of trouble that you don't want to be in.
So DMY start Rough Riders as a label.
Yeah.
And you guys sign over there, and DMX is already there?
Yeah. DMX just went to Def Jam.
Yeah. So somewhere in there, Interscope put together a deal, and so you're back in a building.
Yeah.
And you're cool with that?
Yeah. For a while.
but okay, so the first project, We Are the Streets, was like
loved We Are the Streets.
As a name, as an ideal.
Loved it.
Everything was amazing. And
loved
it. And you guys were yourselves.
Loved it. I was cool up to my solo project.
Which was Gangsta and the Gentleman.
Yeah, I was cool up. No, no.
Oh.
After Gangsta and the Gentleman, actually.
Yeah.
My second solo project there. This is when I became not cool anymore.
With the system.
With the whole system.
Yeah.
That's when I made my decision. As an artist, solo artist, I needed to be independent.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to be tied to no majors anymore, period. Because I had, you know, after my first album, you got to think when, my first album came, it was pretty much, you know, and this was what was fucking crazy. I knew that they really just did, they were just really wanting me pretty much on entertaining it because the mixtapes, I was fucking slaughtering mixtapes at that particular moment. Kiss was hot in the industry as a solo artist. We was all killing the mixtapes. I was just going on a rant. I think it was a Ghost in the Something series with a bunch of them shits, and it's just a bunch of loose freestyles. So they kind of were paying attention to me because the streets was kind of talking about me, because I kind of knew. I said, damn, at that particular time, I was like, what the fuck? Like, King of Rap ain't me. Mm-hmm. Boastiest, braggiest dude ain't me. That, so I was trying to really look at my thing. I said, you know, I'm just giving who the fuck I am. Like, why hide it? Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm just... give it to them raw. I make hard bars. I make shit, and that's just what I was going with. So I was kind of heating up, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So when they, I remember when I got the, you know, I did the solo deal over there, it was like, and you know, they talk, and they talk in front of you and all that. They was like, maybe he's forecast to do like, I mean, we'll be lucky to get 50 out of them, 55,000 to be good. And it was like, that'd be a good thing. Like, you know what I mean? And I was like, okay. You know, in my mind, I'm saying, I took that personal, like, to myself. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, and in my mind, I was saying, I was like, I could sell 100. That was really what was in my mind.
Yeah.
I know I could sell 100. I ain't going gold, I was telling myself. But I could sell 100,000. And it got me at like 50, 55. So I'm like, all right, now I'm a really fucking, I'm going to go crazy on the streets. So now I'm going up and I'm making an album. Now I'm making Gangsta and the Gentleman. And when I'm making it, I'm just in my zone. I'm smoking, I'm potted out. I'm thinking, I'm doing mixtapes, I'm doing an album. I'm really trying to be strategic about, you know, how I'm going to present this to the people, my first body of work as a solo. So I'm really trying to, you know, just really fill myself out. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to talk about shit that I really fuck with pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And this and that. So Swiss know how much I smoke, and every day is, y'all need my smoke, I need my smoke, I need my smoke. Him, I got something perfect for you.
Oh my God.
And he's like, I got the fucking perfect beat for you. And I remember I actually went to, because I was in Rough Rider studio mostly every day. I think I went downtown at a session, or he was downtown or something. We was coming back and forth, and he had that. I was like, oh yeah, I got this now. And they just, as we was making the whole album, people was coming, and I seen them like, oh, because you know, when you could be doing mixtape, you know, and I knew I had them in the pocket from the mixtapes, but I knew I had to bring that same vibe. And it's hard to do that though and translate it to a song.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to say, I got to give it myself. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I got to talk about my history, my family, what I came up doing, my hardships. So I just gave them me, and it pretty much worked. And that shit, I think that shit sold 800 and something. It may go platinum one of these days.
So it
didn't do the 50.
Yeah.
It may have went platinum. Shit, I don't know. But I know it was at 800 and something. So I was feeling relieved. So now I'm coming home, and I'm saying to myself, damn, if I was to have been out to make this shit even run more, because I went to jail during that,
mm-hmm.
I would have been, you know, I would have murdered it and killed it. But now I'm like, I know formats. Now I know what to do. I know this shit. I got a plan. So I come home, and I think they just wanted me to make, I get high again.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to do that, but I got a strategy. I said, I make music, and this was my thing. I said, I'm an artist. I don't know how I'm going to feel one day. So I don't put myself in a box. One day I might make the happiest shit in the world. Next day it might be like a mass murderer song. Who the fuck knows? Next day it might be a conscious ass. I don't know. Like, I make music.
Yeah.
So now I made I'm Black because I've been in jail.
Great record.
I've been in jail now. Now I've been in jail for being famous and having money. And it's like, holy shit. I forgot I was Black. I didn't forget I was Black. But no matter what, you fucking Black. This country is the same. You kind of forget that when you get in rapping the thing. So now I'm like, how the fuck did I really forget that? Not that I forgot, but it's like how that wasn't a staple in my, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I was saying to myself, I got caught up in the life, in the glamour and glitz, in the streets, and this and that. And I'm like, but damn, there's so many people. Like, that shit is the slave shit, part two. And we don't pay attention to it, or we don't say it enough, because there's a regular human beings and civilians out here. You're not really keeping in mind what's happening to your fellow man. That's a human being. That's American or whatever. And then especially for minorities, when you see this, how fucked up the sentencing is, when you're a minority, it really makes you feel horrible. So I was like, I gotta talk about this shit, about being Black and such and such. And that shit they just wasn't feeling me. So I'm like, listen, check this out. I had you remember I had You're My Favorite Drug.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had You're My Favorite Drug, and I had I'm Black.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I need y'all to put out I'm Black for Black History Month and go fucking crazy. Then right after that, I need you to drop You're My Favorite Drug.
Mm-hmm. For Pot Appreciation Month.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, you know, right, boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had it all planned. So they wasn't really fucking when I'm Black. They wasn't fucking with the second plan. Then T.I. came out with the stoned, same exact record. Fucking skyrocketed. I was furious.
I bet.
At the label. I'm like, I fucking told y'all. Like, I specifically told y'all to design it. Y'all was so worried about me making them black and not wanting to support it, and y'all was hiding it. I said, what the fuck? It's a song. It's the truth. It's real. It's like, what it... Because it was like, when I did that, like, really, there was times I'd be in that office, and I was like, this is career suicide. Mm. And I feel it, and I know it, because, you know, when you first get into the game, you kind of don't know shit. Now we've done Money, Power, Respect.
Yeah.
We've done We Are the Streets.
Yep.
I've seen kids do his solo album. I've done my solo album. You can't, it's not, now I'm picking up on shit. Now mm-hmm. I know body language, slick rhetoric talk. Now I know the person who's assigned to my project. Now she's assigned to 50, Banks, Mariah, MJ, I mean, Mary, and somebody else. I'm like, are y'all fucking kidding me? How can that person work my shit like? With, I said 50's out of the, they got 50 and Mary Blige, Mariah, and somebody else. And I said, y'all fucking kidding me. Like, you know, I'm not paying attention and doing, because I would call up, like, did y'all do, we didn't get to it yet. I was like, yo, I told them one time, because I already knew they had a problem, because before I went to jail, they said they wasn't going to drop my album at Interscope downtown. I said, and this is the first album. I said, y'all know how hard I worked. We had a plan. Y'all know I was going to jail. Told y'all all of this. Prior, I could have not done this and waited. Y'all told me to. I did it. Complete. Did some. I said, and I think this is when they took me serious. So I thought I was crazy. I said, I would hate to burn this whole fucking building down. I seriously would hate to come fuck this whole office up and burn it because y'all lied to me. I said, I'm going to jail. I have kids.
Yeah.
I had a family. And, like, I'm going to take this personal. It was the stupid thing to do, but it took me serious. And the album came out, and so it worked. So at this time, I'm like.
Because that album was fire. Yeah. So, yeah.
So at this time now, I'm like, damn, we did that. We are let the locks go. I don't want to be an asshole. And, you know. And be no drama. So now I'm like, I need to speak to Jimmy myself personally. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to speak to Jimmy. And I love Jimmy for this. I remember sitting down, speaking when I told him, I'm an artist. I explained the whole, I'm black.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite drug. Explained the whole scenario, who I am, this and that.
And his glasses fogged up.
And he let me right go. And he said, because he didn't have to. And it was the thing, he's like, I get where you're coming from. And I know, because he used to hook me up to rock with certain artists, too. He even put me with a rock group before, this and that. So I think he got kind of who I was, where I was coming from. So he's like, I don't want to do that. And I ain't like that happened to you neither. So it'd be, you know, my blessings.
Wow.
But if you want to stay, stay. But if you want to go. So it was pretty cool. And then I just started doing independent shit after that.
Just one more thing on I'm Black. What were your mom's feelings on that, given that I'm guessing she grew up in apartheid?
Yeah. My mom loved it. My mom loved that song. My mom loves that song.
And about I Get High, we were talking about this morning.
Oh, it's the worst edited version I've ever heard of a song. It is the worst edited version I've ever heard of any song ever.
Did it kill Swiss to replay and re-sing?
I think they had to redo that shit like 5 times. This is why I said, but you know what's fucking crazy? Because... I had to change it so many times because there was words that they were letting everyone else say. And I was like, why can't I say it? And it was like, because of how you rap. I was like, what do you mean by that? Like, that just happened to me on the Lox album, the last Lox album, the most recent one. I'm like, censorship is a motherfucker. Wait, like, you know what I mean?
They edited you on your 2016 album?
Yeah, I got for, I said Pop a Cop. I got censored, warned, flagged.
Damn.
All kind of shit. And then
which
I said,
did you change it to?
Then I told them, but I referenced this. I forgot what it is. There's a rock song that talks about popping everybody, mm-hmm. and there's actual bullets flying and shit like that. And he was like, nah, but it's different.
Right, when Johnny Cash says it.
I'm different. Like, why? Right, why the fuck is it different? Because I'm black as did. Like, just say, because you're black and we assume you're from the ghetto, it's different. I was actually on TMZ for that shit.
Really?
Yeah, serious shit.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It was cool, too.
Yeah. But wait, so, yeah, I Get By is horrible. By.
Yeah, it is.
Horrible. Like
fuck the clean.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Rough Riders a little bit. When was the first time you met DMX?
From young, because I don't know. I knew DMX since I was little.
Was he always the same person?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, 1,000%.
Man,
1,000%.
And how
pray with him
during rap? Not when I was little. Not at all. I rhymed with him.
How did it feel like when he took off and became the biggest artist in the in the country, in the world, everything.
Great. I'm so happy for
two number one albums in 1 year. Like, that was
X was a star before we was all on. Like, he'd been a star.
Yeah.
He's always been a star. Even in the thing, like, he's been a star. He has always been that charismatic, always had that much energy, always been that passionate. I remember shit when I was in jail. Actually, X was in jail with me that same the same time. not doing the gangster and the gentleman thing.
I mean, my
first when I was younger,
right?
And I never forget. I remember I was actually in D Block too. Mm. X was a couple blocks away. He comes get me, like, yo, dog, what you doing? Chilling. He brings me to another part. I never even seen this part of the jail. He ends up being like upstairs, and there's a band waiting with about 20 dudes we got to rap against. Yeah, we gonna kill him. Like that. That's he's always been that passionate. Yeah. Always been about his business. Always been. He's always been that.
Were you there for the Jay and DMX battle?
No, I wasn't. Mm. I would have loved to see that.
Yeah.
Do you want to lie about it and say you were?
Nah. I got to lie and say who I thought won.
How about the first time you met Swiss?
I feel like I've known him for all these guys forever. I don't remember. I just know him from the lab when we mm-hmm. first started working. And he going super hard. Like, yeah. Swiss used to bang the fuck out, dog. Like, bang out. Him, Grease.
Mm.
PK.
Mm-hmm.
That's early Rough Riders foundation of beats, like, you know what I'm saying? And they did a fucking fabulous job.
When we saw the reunion, we were so pumped. Down Bottom was our everything. Like, our mm-hmm. everything. Had you seen Drag On through the years?
A couple times here and there, yeah.
I mean,
I follow him on Twitter too. Oh, okay. I've seen him a few times during the year.
How about the first time you met Eve?
Eve is hard. I like Eve.
Yeah.
It's my sister.
She still got it.
Cool, yeah. She's real cool. Real beautiful person. Always good vibes. I used to always... she used to be in the studio working real hard. I used to always see her. Especially when I was working on Gangsta and the Gentleman. And things out. She would go hard. And I just seen her getting better and better and better and better every day. And then just coming into her home. So it was beautiful to see. She was born to be a star.
How about when the T-Rex accident happened?
That was rough. That was definitely rough on the riders. For D's accident, it was real. You know, it was crazy. Anytime a leader gets hurt, you know what I'm saying? Or the captain of the team or something, it's an effect on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can't help but be an effect on the team. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
So those are all, like, a lot of people that certainly our audience knows. One person who they may not know, other than us talking about him or, you know, having seen him, and he's obviously been mentioned a lot lately because he passed recently, was Ice Pick. And Ice Pick was Jada's right hand. And
yeah.
For those who don't know, Rough Riders and Star Trek. And
A lot of people.
And he was real Harlem.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the man and his life?
Beautiful, beautiful man. The most optimistic man I know. You can put the battery in your back when needed. Very concerned about it all. Always making a play so to involve everybody. You know, picks a, for us, the Locks, personally, especially for Kiss, but for the Locks, period, that's like, it's like we lost a whole couple departments. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As far as a... It's like if we lost a few floors of a business, he's a solid foundation. He helps with everything. Like, even seriously, like with the last Locks album, before, you know, we was working throughout the years, and he'll always come and keep it motivated. Because we have plenty of opportunities before Rock Nation to do the Locks album. Some, you know, and some we sound interested, paper not. Didn't make sense paperwork-wise and business-wise, but... Just for somebody to keep you that motivated and always reminds you a legend. Y'all legends. Y'all can't hold a legacy. So, big loss for us.
Yeah.
Great, man. Great. Spirit's incredible. Because it takes a lot. And the music business takes a lot from you, which most people don't understand. It takes so much full of shit, people, and so much phony shit. It becomes a headache. And just so much people want to take from you and take your energy, take your idea, take your thoughts, take your love, take your likeness. Do you know? It's hard to, when you find someone very genuine and giving to multiple people, you gotta hold on. You know, so it's a big loss for us.
Rest in peace.
But big gain for the heavens. I mean, we lost him physically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Energy never dies. Energy is always around. His presence will always be felt, but just the lack of the physical presence, you know, his name will forever live because we're going to make sure of that for 1,000%. But it's a big, you know, you just, rare people are like, you know, that it's been a rough one. Then Prodigy.
Then Prodigy.
So it's been fucking like, it's like, you know, shit's been crazy, so. Just for, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know? Shows a lot.
You're one of our favorite people to follow on Twitter.
Thank you.
We fave a lot of your tweets. but I love how normal your life is. I guess that's the word. Yeah. Like, I like when you tweet about, like, Seth Meyers. Like, you're in bed watching Seth Meyers with your wife and then talking about, like, Jennifer Lawrence. Like,
it's true.
Yeah. Like, I like your life. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm regular, man. I think the dopest part of being an artist, you know, as I've learned over the years, I guess as I matured, is to just know I'm lucky I'm an artist. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Everybody's normal. Like, I think that's what I think artists think. Like, I'm not normal. Like, you fucking lucked up. Like, you caught the luck of the drawing. Whatever you do, because everybody's talented in one way or the other. One, like there's some things people do better than others, and everybody has a talent. So if you luck up to get a job doing what you love to do, and that's what really fucks me up about artists. Like, you just rhyme, you shit, you sleep, you eat, you breathe, you bleed, you walk. You're not any better. Fame and recognition doesn't make a person better or more valuable than the next man. It doesn't. It just, we're all human at some point. It's your character and what you bring to the table. If you could sit, Barack Obama in front of me and a homeless man, I'm going to give them both the same respect until somebody did something to make me have a lack of respect for them. So I think we're artists, I think you have to be normal. Like, I'm pretty normal. I'm a pothead. Mm-hmm. I like to laugh. I sell fruits and veggies and hardcore raps and conscious raps. I'm a fucking weirdo, but I'm a cool weirdo. Like, I'm not a rapey, creepy, weird weirdo. Like, I'm a cool, smoked out, vibey weirdo. Like, I'm not, you know? So my weirdo-ness is, like, on a cool level. Like, you know? Because most rappers are nerds, too. Like, that's what people don't, you know? And it's like, be you. Like, that's, I'm a firm believer in being you. Like, you know what I mean? If I didn't believe in being me, like, fruits and veggies doesn't fit in with my, this,
yeah, you know, you're over
my overall yeah. view of somebody was saying. But they was like, when I met my first dude, he was like, you ain't scared? I'm like, fuck no, because if you don't fuck with me, fuck you. I'm not gonna.
And you said that on your new record, by the way. Yeah, which I love.
Fuck you. Like, you don't have to, you don't have to fuck with me. Like, screw off. Like, I don't care if you like me. I think we're in a world where people need to feel like they're liked and, well, that's admired, literally social media. Yeah, like
that's
what the, who gives a fuck, dog? Like, if you like yourself and you feel cool with what you're doing, fuck what everybody says, because everybody doesn't give a fuck about you. I'm big on not giving a fuck who don't give a fuck about me. You're actually wasting time if you're doing that. I don't got that kind
of
time to waste.
On a waste of time. That's the real, do you like us? That's the real question. Yeah.
One of our favorite people, not just in this business, but on this world, is Currency. And
this is a cool dude.
He's one of the best dudes. That's and one guy. Of the best senses of humor ever. Yeah. How'd you guys get to know each other in the first place?
I'm gonna guess weed.
I know, yeah.
I'm gonna say pot. I'm gonna say pot. Yeah. I was listening to his mixtapes. I was in New Orleans, and then we just got up, we smoked, and I think we did that in a couple hours, bro.
Yeah,
I ain't gonna lie. The first 28, that had to be half a day at tops.
Mm-hmm.
Half a day tops. Like, you know what I mean? It was just, I think potheads are the coolest people in the world. Like, you know what I'm saying? Especially in the music, I'm like, in the music industry, is you're either gonna be flamboyant cool or flamboyant and cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? I'm either cool with cool and cool flamboyant. Like, just flamboyant is like not my cup of tea. Like, you know what I mean? Cause I'm too high. Like, it's fucking my high up. Like, I don't wanna fuck my high up. I think I just like, I appreciate people who get stoned and have great work ethic. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer in what this thing of ours, what we do. If you're lucky enough to have people listening to you, you should bust your ass and trying to deliver. to your fans, because one day you're not going to be able to. So that's why I try to bust my ass when it comes to work, and I try to pretty much
deliver. What kind of like weed gets you like slumped?
It takes a lot, bro. It takes kind of like that. I got to do edibles to slump myself. I got to do edibles or the bong. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I gotta hit the bong. But I've been off Jungle Boys, and shout out to Jungle Boys. Shout out to Ivan. Shout out to my man Big Burner, of course. Make sure you get the Vibes album we just dropped. Cookies always holds me down, you know what I'm saying? So I smoke West Coast weed. I'm a New York ninja.
Could've signed to Death Row.
New York ninja, West Coast lungs for sure. You know, I think San Francisco and LA and Seattle and a couple other places just has the best weed in the world, and it's a pretty cool vibe, and I just like to get high.
There's a few songs where you have legendary features. Talk about that Rick Ross joint.
That, he just sent me a beat. You know that? I didn't know what that shit was going to be.
He wasn't on it?
I laid it 24. No. He actually wasn't. He just sent me a joint. I was like, what you want me to do? He was like, just do what you do. And I actually laid the 24. And then I don't know what happened. I thought it was just, I ain't think about this shit. You know, you just do your shit and do your shit. And I remember one day my fucking phone kept blowing the fuck up. Like, yo, I was like, yo, what the fuck is going on? And then it's like the next day my phone kept blowing. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, and then I was like, oh, okay. And then people was hitting me, and I remember on the streets, because I'm like, you know, you get your thing. And they like, yo. That's the, then it became the biggest song of the thing, and I'm like,
enormous. Biggest.
I'm like a lucky motherfucker, I say. I know how to luck up, yeah. Boy.
Yeah. How about the Akon?
I know how to luck up.
The Akon feature.
That was meant to be. I was fresh off of jail. I had shit to talk about. He had the song out already. He was working it. I think I just added the magic to it. Another luck up, man.
And luck up, not a lock up.
That's right. And then, does it count as a feature when you're? It technically was Jada's song, but it's basically you guys. It's the two of you. We gonna make it. And it's, if there's any song that I think is like really indicative of who you guys are and what you're about and the fun and the lyrics is that song, right? Yeah. How did that song come to be? I mean, we've talked to Alchemist about it. We talked to Jada about it. But what's your version of it?
Rough Rider Studio, High Night. We working on Kiss's joint, working on other joints, and that beat was just magic to me. I really just remember, to tell you the truth, I just remember being dumb high and hearing the beat and being like, what the fuck? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what the fuck? And I think we was more in the zone, like, this gun. I just felt like it needed that. Like that.
The back and forth?
That back and forth. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because the tempo of the beat and just the feel of it. And it was just, I just remember really being high. And when it came on, I was like, wow. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It was like really wow. And we was in the zone in the pockets of making different shit. But that particular beat, I felt like, Kiss wanted to do an in and out. I was like, that shit is perfect for it. That beat is like the ultimate. Cause really, that's the what I remember the most is just like this fucking little white guy got the more soul in these fucking. What the fuck? Yo? It's my nigga, Al. This nigga's not white. He can't be white. You know I love Al too, man. Yeah. That's my guy, man. You know.
Another great sense of humor, by the way.
You know, Alchemist is made on black too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost forget that
one. Not.
Oh, you smoke a lot.
And then speaking of back and forth.
Oh, I was going to say, what were you going to say?
I was going to say the Mariah joint.
Oh, yeah.
Going back on that. The Clue remix for We Belong Together.
Yeah, that shit was cool.
That was hard.
Yeah. That shit was cool.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, did you know that there are going to be 26 artists on the One Blood remix? I know the answer is no, but I want you to talk about it.
What remix is that?
The game, One Blood.
with 400 people.
Oh
on
yeah,
it.
Nah. I don't
like
think
he did it on purpose. He was just like, "This is gonna have the most, you know, features on it ever." And
I'm on it. Was we going in and out, or is just like the whole group? What is it?
It's you. It's the two of you guys.
We did it in and out.
Yeah. No, you did in and out on a bunch of other. The
that's
clips.
Blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
You're in minute 13.
Yeah. Like, sometimes unless I'm in a whip with somebody, because one thing I try to not do, like as an MC, just me personally, mm-hmm. I don't really, when I fresh make a project, I listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to it, but I don't pop it in too much after that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Once it's. Cause I try to move on. I think a lot of artists feel like dope and they get stuck on their shit, and then you like dick riding yourself too hard, and your ego tripping and gassed up more than you should be, and then that kind of takes you from honing your craft. I take this shit like martial arts, or how an athlete would take basketball, or you know a boxer would take training. Like I try to
you're like the actor who doesn't watch the movie.
Yeah,
like
I try
you
to keep
just
prepared.
Made
like so when I'm in a car. On my homies play, I'd be like, oh shit, like I am. Oh wow, I forgot all about that. Like. You know, because you want to, as an MC, you want to leave a catalog. Like, eventually when I'm gone, I want to at least have left catalog as an MC. That's the whole point of what I started this shit for. Somebody say, yo, you rhyme dope. Everything else that comes with it is a plus or a minus.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Everything else is, like I say, a plus or minus. The whole point of it from the jump was to be recognized as being a dope lyricist.
Yeah. Do you remember your verse on that Richie Thumbs song?
If you tell me one, you got one line? If you give me like one intro. Boss in the road, some crossing the toll, boss in the road. I don't know. If I hear one line, yeah. I could say it. That's but dope. I can't remember.
Yeah. When we had Dave East on the podcast, he said that.
That's my young fella right there.
Yeah, and he said you were his favorite rapper, and when he met you, it was just like you didn't let him down. You were like as great as he thought you were, and then you did work together. And was it on the Burner project? Is it on Vibes?
Yeah, we got a couple drums.
Yeah, yeah.
But East is definitely on Vibes. East is on there. Scarface is on there.
Right.
Wiz is on there.
Yep.
Ty Dolla Sign's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Sheek and Kiss is on there.
Of course.
I'm missing somebody. I'm high. I'm missing a few people. My son even produced on there.
Is that right?
Yeah, my son produced a track on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What does he go by?
Prophet.
Spelled like?
Prophet. He spells it a weird way.
Oh, okay.
Some millennial. Millennial exotic. Right?
We obviously talked about you stealing from Odd Job, but... Yeah. You said in like an old Vibe profile that you did with Chris X, you said that if you were caught, if the police had found you guys or tracked you guys on the Bad Boy tour and all the stealing you did from all the convenience stores, that you'd be locked up for 15 years.
Yo. All the convenience store robberies we did, I felt like it was robberies. Like, it was like free. Get off. Yo. I feel like bandits. Like, we were bandits. Absolutely beasts. Yeah. On a whole tour, it would be some days I would go and just throw the 20 on the counter. Like, I feel bad. I feel we like just stole everything. Like, there's some days I went in here still and just watch what everybody else was stealing.
Oh my God.
And then, I never went in a store with, like, let me grab some money to buy this on Bad Boy Tour. Never. Not one rest stop. It's like, yo, go over there. Yo, what's the soda? Just go in. Sometimes I would just literally walk in, grab what I want. There's so many people in the thing, and by the register kit, I just like, it's 40 people, 20-something people at the thing. But I'm not sitting on this fucking couch. I walk right in, grab what I want, grab this, grab that, walk right out. Not sneaking, hiding, nothing. And, you know, sometimes we take a whole rack of chips. Like, yo, the amount of time we could have got, like, if they, like, the internet was popping back then, like, that shit now. We'd have been on True TV, you know, like the
show.
You would have been on True TV for every state, though.
Oh my
every
God.
State, every stop. Boosting was the thing to do, bro. Oh my lord, yo! What we did to them gas stations and stores, I feel bad to this day. I really feel bad. It's like I don't know why we did that.
Man. Oh my god! Do you have any Black Rob stories?
I love BR. BR's my man, huh? Black Rob's a great, great dude. I ain't gonna tell you none of the Black Rob stories. I don't think they coach you. I don't think they coach you.
We'll have to get Black Rob up here.
That's right. That's
he
right.
can tell the stories. Most legendary performance. You guys on the All That stage.
What's that? What stage is that?
That was the Nickelodeon show.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Was that. That wasn't Ricky Lake, right?
No.
It was Nickelodeon.
That Nickelodeon, it was like a children's...
Who was the
like,
host?
It was a bunch of kids. Like, it was
okay.
It was like a
what
kid's
SNL. What the fuck
SNL.
Did they book us for?
I don't know.
Who book us for that shit? I used to say that to someone. Who the fuck booked us? Like, you ever go... sometimes I go somewhere and I'd be like, why the fuck did they bring me here? It's like, especially when they say, don't smoke. I'm like, yeah, I know y'all. You fucking know you just booked
Wait, why was that stage the best?
I mean,
just because it was so
why
unusual.
The fuck was we there?
Yeah, why were you there? Like, it's
they paid us.
Yeah,
my favorite stage, 2009 Summer Jam when you guys came out and
that's the loudest like Summer Jam has ever been.
When you guys came out to the Green Lantern joint,
this is
D-Block.
Oh. Yeah,
like unbelievable. Like we've never heard anything like that.
I remember we did so many fucking Summer Jams. That was a good one though. What year was that?
2009.
Oh, that was
2009. When that came on and it just like lit the place
City
up, it's unbelievable.
Man. We cool dudes, yeah. We cool guys, man. You can't find guys like us. Gotta love these Glocks guys. Buy their shit. iTunes, check it out. Got a shit called Seven with my man Tyler Quad.
Yeah,
and I just dropped Vibes with Burner. Please buy it.
Listen, you went from odd job to making the music business your job. It's pretty incredible.
In the juice business.
914 still same number. Yo, Styles, thank you so much for coming through.
Yo, thanks for having me. So awesome to meet you.
Yeah.
Love, man. Come on through, man. Come fuck with me one day.
Yo, we told Jada. We told Jin. We had Jin up here. We tell everybody. We're like, we're gonna go up there. We also said that we want
to bring a Jesus for Life to Harrison.
I do too.
Yeah. Hey.
Fuck with Harrison.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, It's The Real. If people want to find out more about our podcast, A Waste of Time with It's The Real. And if people want to find out more about that sure to be legendary show at Highline Ballroom on July 26th called A Waste of Time Live with all of our Rockefeller friends, where can they go?
You can buy tickets at itsthereal.com. You can also go and listen to our old podcast at soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. We are also on iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real. I'm sure it's the same thing on Google Play and Tidal and any other streaming service.
Yes.
For that, you can also go to Instagram at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real, Instagram at It's The Real. We are also on Snapchat at It's The Real and It's The Real Eric because It's The Real was taken.
Yes. Jeff, this podcast isn't going anywhere unless we get the word out and we tell friends and family and strangers on the street and roommates and landlords and everybody that we run into at the grocery store to spread the word about this podcast. We know it starts with us. So who would you like to tell?
I want to tell Davey on Snapchat. I want to tell Emilio Estevez, Matt Fastow, FCB22, BoofBonzer68, and Mind Statements all on Snapchat.
Wow.
Because as Mind Statements said, he said, Snapchat is not dead. And so I just want to... I mean, I barely use it, but people have been reaching out to me for some reason.
Snapchat's
so.
in hospice right now. Jeff, I want to shout out to Real G Black. Shout out to G Black, who's somewhere down in the South, or at least was, when he hit us up with 3 pictures of one of our favorite places from when we were kids.
That we never went to.
South of the border. So if you're driving along I-95 and you're getting close to the border between North Carolina and South Carolina.
For like 500 miles, there are billboards saying... South of the Border's coming up.
Right.
South of the Border's coming up.
They have this cartoon character, Pedro, with a big sombrero, and they're all, like, funny puns, and they're all, like, getting you hyped up to stop at this roadside attraction.
Which our dad was like, fuck this place. We are not stopping at this place.
And you know that we're going to shout out anybody who stops by South of the Border, and specifically G Black. Shout out to G Black.
Yeah, we're trying to get that South of the Border sponsorship. G Black did also say that he was riding with the worst driver in the world.
Right. Well,
which was his girl.
No, I think he said scariest, right?
Scary. What?
I don't understand the difference between worst and scariest driver, but hopefully he's still around to listen to this podcast and the shout out. And hopefully you can come and listen to our next episode.
Shout out to G Black. Guys, go make sure to check out Teddy Bear Fresh, our debut rap album, alongside Currency, Smoke Dizza, Bun B, Michael Christmas, Tunji Ige, Jazz Cartier, Just Blaze. A whole lot of people on there. Go check that out on Spotify and Apple Music and all the other streaming services. People really fucking with it. Not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week.